And so the question then is, how do you achieve your goal of less dependence on oil without breaking your farmers?
Well, good evening, Truth Speakers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Happy Friday. The alleged grown-ups, they're not really, but they play them on television. That would be Dick Cheney and, Uncle Dick and the shoe lady, Condoleezza Rice. While those two are off doing adult foreign policy stuff, apparent adult foreign policy stuff, in important countries like Israel and Australia, what do they do with Junior? What do they do with Bush? I mean, Gary Trudeau in Doonesbury has this guy so pegged. You know, he's like a 10-year-old, Bush is. So what do Bush and what do Cheney and the shoe lady do with this freak? They send him, they keep him happy. They send him off to do domestic policy field trips around the Deep South this week, you know, where he can talk about corn and cows and filling up your gas tank with something other than oil. You know, I watched some of the audiences at this gig he was at. Was that today, Kathy? Oh, yesterday. Oh, my God. The audiences are sitting there and their eyes are just glassing over. The only thing you're thinking about, the corn farmers, is, well, let's get it on. God damn it. Raise up the price of corn even higher. Come on. Get it on. So as a consequence of all that, we have some moron sounds for you tonight. Of Junior running around the South here, acting like he's, of the common people, talking about pig people and farmers and things. He got to visit the Chattanooga Choo Choo on Wednesday and talk about health care. That was boring. So then yesterday, they sent him to a place where man or monkey particularly enjoyed pretending to go vroom, vroom, vroom in an ethanol-powered race car at an ethanol and alternative fuel development center in North Carolina. Vroom, boom, boom, boom. Even got to wear a lab coat and everything, even goggles. There he was. They put goggles on this jackass, and what's he picking up? A handful of corn. What the hell are they afraid of? It's not Popcorn George, and there are no terrorists around. Take off the goggles. Oh, I got on my goggles. You know, my degree's in history, and here I am with all these PhDs. Oh, my God. Oh, well, you got to laugh, right? I had a very strange and enlightening experience today. And these are coming less and less frequent. The older I get, enlightening experiences. That's just kind of the way it is. As you get older, you will find that to be true also. If you're over a certain age listening to this program, you know what I'm talking about. When you reach a certain age and you discover something that is enlightening, truly enlightening, you're just like, for a moment, dumbstruck. It's like a momentary lapse of reason. As the division bell goes off in your head. Well, here's what happened to me. I was folding clothes this morning from out of the washing machine. It was my turn. We take turns doing this as best we can. And I noticed that so many of the clothes I was folding, I had to turn right side out. They were inside out. And, you know, I've mentioned this to Kathy in the past. Kathy, when you put the clothes, especially Molly's clothes, in the laundry basket, will you please turn them right side out before you put them in there? Because, you know, when you take clothes off a kid, you just pull them off because the kid is usually fighting you tooth and nail. And Kathy has been telling me, well, I do turn them right side out. And I said, well, it's impossible because look here, what I'm folding. So she said, but you don't understand. When you you put clothes in a washing machine right side out, they turn themselves inside out. She said, I read that in a Hints from Heloise 30 years ago. I know it's true. All right, not 30 years ago. 20 years ago. And I know it's true. And I paused for a minute and looked at her, and I said, oh, my God, my wife is losing it. So I said, all right, here, let's. So we went to Molly's hamper, and we had about 30 pieces of soil clothing that needed to be washed. I said, okay, let's do an experiment. So I put them all right side out, took them to the basement, put them in the washer, then put them in the dryer, and we went about our daily things and came home this afternoon. I came home from the playground with Molly, and Kathy came home from wherever she was, and we got the clothes out, and, oh, my God, about a third of them were inside out. I didn't know this, that clothes turn themselves inside out in a dryer. And, of course, Kathy had tried to explain to me. She said, well, you see, clothes are made when they're sewn together. When the pieces of clothing are sewn together, they're sewn together outside in. With the inside out, that's how they're stitched together. Take a look at clothes. You can tell that. And that's their natural state. The natural state of the cloth is to be inside out once it's stitched together. So when it goes into the tumble mechanisms of the washer and the dryer, the clothing tends to go back to its original, the way it was originally stitched together, which to me is madness. I mean, I've never heard, this is like something, like clothes have some kind of consciousness. And I can't stand that idea.
And that, Truth Seekers, is our non-scientific lesson on entropy for the laundry. The natural state of things, the chaos of the laundry basket, is always increasing.
Okay.
Out of order, chaos, without an input of energy, i.e. turning the clothes right side out again once they come out of the dryer. See, you too can learn basic physics on the Molloy program. Hey, give me a break. It's our 10th wedding anniversary tonight.
Where's the ice pick? Oh, my God. Well, anyway, regardless of that lecture on... Okay, so you're smarter than me. All right. That's all right.
I never said smarter.
Regardless of the mini lecture there on entropy and whatever the hell you were talking about, God, I feel like George Bush when I'm around you. Regardless of that, it was still an enlightening moment to me to find out that clothing literally can turn itself inside out inside your washing machine or your dryer. I'll be damned. I'll just be damned. I mean, as old as I am, I've probably done 17 million loads of wash in my life. And I never knew this. Whew, it's been one of those days. I don't know, I feel like Don Imus. We have some weird news from the wacky world of religion tonight. Kentucky Fried Chicken, I'm sure you heard this one. Kentucky Fried Chicken has a new product. It's a fish snacker sandwich, and it has sent an email or a letter or a mission to the Pope in Rome, asking him, the Pope, to bless, to put a blessing on this sandwich. The sandwich is being marketed generally. The chief market officer for KFC said the sandwich should prove especially popular on Fridays when Catholics traditionally don't eat meat in the 40 days leading up to Easter Sunday. I thought the church had gotten rid of that prohibition. I don't care, but I just thought they had. The president of KFC said in the letter to the Pope, quote, "This is the first time KFC has ever served fish nationally, and we believe that the new sandwich could make it easier and more affordable for Catholics to observe the tenets of their faith," end quote. Son of a bitch ought to be cast into hell for that, or purgatory, or someplace. In the first place, more affordable, let's say the little fish sandwich will cost two and a quarter. Do you know how much fish you can... You still can buy fish for two and a quarter. It may be... You know, not the best fish in the world, but what the hell do you think is in the fish sandwiches at McDonald's and KFC? You know what kind of fish that is, don't you? Huh? The letter also offers Pope Benedict the 16th a taste of a fish snacker sandwich. I guess they're going to send him a coupon. the Vatican confirmed receiving the letter, and KFC is hopeful for a response in the next week. Let's take a break. I think I'm going to be sick again.
Speakers, it'll be our secret.
Past the hour, Bill. Writing from near Buffalo, New York, he says the ex-Roman Catholic, the tradition of abstaining from meat on Fridays did go out with Vatican II. However, the practices continued during the Fridays of Lent and on Ash Wednesday. Ash Wednesday and Good Friday continued to be days of fast. Well, I kind of figured there was something like that. I just remember when all my Catholic friends were stunned when... St. Christopher was dropped as a saint. St. Nicholas was dropped as a saint. It was declared that limbo didn't exist anymore except as a dance. Purgatory became a bit dodgy itself. All sorts of things changed in the past 30 or 40 years in Catholicism. Back to the wacky world of religion, the lawyer for a former Baptist church leader who had spoken out just again and again against homosexuality, said yesterday that minister has a constitutional right to solicit sex from an undercover policeman. Yeah, the Reverend Lonnie Latham had supported a resolution calling on gays and lesbians to reject their, quote, sinful, destructive lifestyle, end quote, before he was arrested. And this is his arrest was about a year ago. The trial's coming up now. He was arrested outside the Habana Inn in Oklahoma City, where he had propositioned an undercover policeman to come up to his hotel room for oral sex. Now, this is creative defense. I swear to God, this is why attorneys are desperately needed. When you get in a situation like this, attorneys are very valuable. I don't care what the right-wing freaks say. Without an attorney, you know, you could be picked up and charged with being an enemy combatant and put in guantanamo. Wait a minute, what am I saying? But as long as you're not picked up for that sort of thing, you need an attorney. Well, this guy's attorney, the Reverend Lonnie's attorney, Mark Martin, filed a motion to have this lewdness charge thrown out, saying the Supreme Court ruled in a 2003 decision, Lawrence versus Texas, that it was not illegal for consenting adults to engage in private homosexual acts. Right, yeah. So the Reverend Lonnie, who had been screaming against the filthy queers and their sinful, destructive lifestyle. Of course, he's not gay. He just occasionally likes to get it on with another man and have a little oral sex. But he's not gay. So Attorney Martin said, now my client's being prosecuted basically for having offered to engage in such an act, which basically makes it a crime to ask someone to do something that's legal. End quote. That's what the attorney said. I love attorneys. The ACLU of Oklahoma has filed a brief on behalf of Reverend Lonnie, claiming that Reverend Lonnie's arrest also violated his right to free speech. Free speech? Oh, I get it. In the part where he says, you want to come up to my hotel room and have some oral sex. Okay, So the ACLU, whom I'm also sure the Reverend Lonnie has probably just used as a doormat so many times because, you see, the ACLU, those communist bastards, stick up and stand up for constitutional rights. So here the Reverend Lonnie is claiming protection from a Supreme Court ruling that says homosexual acts between consenting adults is nobody's business. Get your nose out of here. And he's also getting help from the demonic, horrific ACLU. Before his arrest, Reverend Lonnie had spoken against same-sex marriage and in support of a Southern Baptist resolution that called upon gays and lesbians to reject their lifestyle. He also added he thought stoning to death was a problem. No, I'm adding that part. He has since resigned as pastor of the South Tulsa Baptist Church and stepped down from the executive committee of the Southern Baptist Convention, where he was one of four members from Oklahoma. On Thursday, Reverend Lonnie declined to talk to reporters at the non-jury trial. The judge in this case, Roma McElwee, said she would rule on the motion to have it all thrown out and issue a verdict in about 2 weeks. If convicted of the misdemeanor, Latham faces up to a year in jail, the $2,500 fine. This guy ought to be in front of the judge that handled the hearing on how quickly they could do something with Anna Nicole's body before it completely rotted away into a seething pool of ectoplasm. Because had Reverend Lonnie here had that judge would have said, okay, I'm going to rule in favor of the oral sex. All right, now you guys go on and treat each other right.
Sacred, every sperm is great. If a sperm is wasted, God...
You know what?
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
On Nova M Radio, I might add. A couple more here before we get to the hardcore triple X-rated part of the program that we do every night. No, it's not my language. It's the stuff we talk about. So, this is from Brad in Mainz, Germany, who's listening live again this morning. He writes, Dear Mike, as you probably know, this Pope is German, and Germans are famous for their beer. Therefore, it should not be a surprise that this Pope also has his favorite beer, which is brewed locally in his hometown. Shortly after he was named Pope, the beer brand from the new Pope's hometown asked him to bless and endorse their beer as his favorite, which he did. No lie, the delivery trucks of this brand of beer now carry the image of the Pope on their sides with the endorsement that their beer is the Pope's favorite. In return, they sent the Vatican a shipment of beer which should last this Pope until his death, with enough left over to embalm him in. God, it's changed a lot since I was a kid growing up in a Catholic ghetto in Toledo, Ohio. It's certainly changed a lot. And then this is from North Carolina. A high school teacher allowed a group whose declared mission is to, quote, raise an awareness of the danger of Islam, end quote, to distribute literature in his class, including a handout titled, quote, Do Not Marry a Muslim Man, end quote. That's according to the Council on American Islamic Relations. It says a representative from the Camille International Ministries Organization based in Raleigh spoke to a ninth grade world history class at Enloe High School in that city and distributed the literature, which also discussed Jesus. The father of a Muslim student reported the incident. The Council on American Islamic Relations, The council wrote to Wake County School Superintendent Del Burns asking that the incident be investigated and the teacher be disciplined. Burns says he's not received the letter, but an investigation is underway and officials will take appropriate disciplinary action, he promised. On its website, CAMIL, K-A-M-I-L, describes itself as a Christian group, quote, dedicated to teaching the truth about Islam, and says its mission is to, quote, raise an awareness of the danger of Islam, end quote. A phone number for the organization could not be found. An email to the group wasn't returned. In the public schools. Christ. They do, don't they? You know, people talk about the Islamists who can't get over what happened during the Crusades and the Inquisition, and but it seems like fundamentalist dominionist Christianists can't either. It's unbelievable. I you know, a pox on all their houses. I hate it. In the UK tomorrow, in London tomorrow, a massive Stop the War protest is going to occur. One of the marchers, according to The Independent, is a woman who joined with 2 million other people to march against the government's decision to invade Iraq back in 2003. Now, this same woman says as she marches tomorrow, the 600,000 people who have died as a result of the invasion will be on her mind. She says, quote, in 2003, the feeling was incredible. I was delighted that people had made the effort to show just how widely the opposition to war was felt. I remember the amazing feeling I had walking down Shaftesbury Avenue and seeing all the cast of Les Miserables cheering us on from the balcony. When we were demonstrating 4 years ago, 600,000 were not dead. I'll be remembering them on today's march. Thousands upon thousands of people are set to join this particular woman, including politicians, entertainers, military families, anti-war activists, who are among speakers at rallies in London and Glasgow. The demonstration is also a protest at the likely replacement of the Trident nuclear missile system in the UK. For this woman that The Independent quotes, she says the demonstration tomorrow is just as significant as the protest in 2003. She said, quote, I'm protesting against the possibility of the invasion of Iran. I think it's very important that people protest on the streets, even if the government doesn't change its mind. It may not make a difference in terms of policy, but it has an effect in telling the government there's a grand opinion against them. Now, in addition, relatives of soldiers killed or still serving in Iraq are camping outside the number 10 Downing Street, the Prime Minister's residence. They're doing this after handing in a letter to the Prime Minister calling for British troops to be withdrawn immediately, all of them. Its Military Family Against the War group said they were demanding the withdrawal of all troops from Iraq, despite Blair's announcement Wednesday to reduce the number from 7,100 to some 5,500. A founding member of Military Families Against the War, Rose Gentle, whose 19-year-old son Gordon was killed by a bomb in Basra in 2004, said they want the Prime Minister to bring all the soldiers home. The mother said the families want a commitment for better health care when they do return to the UK. In a letter outlining their concerns delivered to the Prime Minister, Blair was also urged to meet the protesters over the weekend, but according to the BBC, the government spokesman said that Blair would be staying at the Prime Minister's country residence at Chequers, northwest of London, and would not be able to meet the families. This march is expected to include the biggest protest rally in the British capital against nuclear weapons since the height of the campaign during the days of the U.S. war in Vietnam in the early 70s. They don't listen, do they? After a while, when a government doesn't listen repeatedly, And after a while, when a governing class continues to act in direct opposition to the will of the people, and after a while, when a government continues to flaunt its power to destroy civil liberties and to conduct itself as if it were a totalitarian government, after a while, no matter what the country is, the people, unless the middle class has been utterly destroyed, the people rise up and remove that government. Now, we tried to do that this past November. And remember the boxes. Do you remember that there are four boxes for use in the defense of liberty? Soap, ballot, jury, ammo. Right? Right. Now, one last thing here on this particular topics. You know that Jimmy Carter's new book, which talked about the apartheid-like treatment of Palestinians by the occupying Israeli Defense Forces, that has been going on since 1967. You know that Jimmy Carter was blasted, called an anti-Semite, the only American president who has ever produced a real peace agreement between the Israelis and any Arab state, that would be between the Israelis and Egypt, the only president who has busted his ass to try to bring peace to the Middle East. A lot of American Zionists, as well as Israeli Zionists, decided to refer to Jimmy Carter as an anti-Semite because he spoke the truth where it concerns the treatment of the Palestinian people in the occupied territories. And Carter has really taken a beating. He has acknowledged one or two misstatements in his book, but he has refused to back down from what he says is a fair and balanced assessment of how the occupying forces have treated the Palestinians and continue to treat them even as we speak tonight. So comes now a UN human rights investigation that has likened Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories to apartheid South Africa. What? And says there should be, quote, serious consideration, end quote, over bringing the occupation to the International Court of Justice. The report was put together by John Dugard, a South African law professor who is the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories and represents some of the most forceful criticism yet of Israel's 40-year occupation. Well, what's it going to take sometimes for people to wake up to some fundamental truths that are occurring around this planet, huh?
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Ten before the hour, the comments of this Professor Dugard, or I believe I'm pronouncing it right, he said that although Israel and apartheid South Africa were different regimes, quote, Israel's laws and practices and the occupied territory certainly resemble aspects of apartheid, close quote. His comments are in advance in an advanced version of a report on the UN Human Rights Council's website ahead of its session next month. It goes on here, after describing the situation for Palestinians in the West Bank with closed zones, demolitions, and preference given to settlers on roads with building rights and by the army, he said, quote, can it seriously be denied that the purpose of such action is to establish and maintain domination by one racial group, Jews, over another racial group, Palestinians, and systematically oppressing them? Israel denies that this is its intention or purpose, but such an intention or purpose may be inferred from the actions described in this report, end quote. He dismisses Israel's argument that the sole purpose of the vast concrete and steel West Bank barrier, the wall, is for security. He says, quote, it has become abundantly clear that the wall and checkpoints are principally aimed at advancing the safety, convenience, and comfort of settlers, end quote. He goes on to say, Gaza remained under occupation despite the withdrawal of settlers in 2005. He said, quote, in effect, following Israel's withdrawal, Gaza became a sealed-off, imprisoned, and occupied territory, end quote. Professor Dugard said his mandate was solely to report on human rights in the occupied Palestinian territories, and he described as a violation of international humanitarian law the firing of rockets by Palestinians from Gaza into Israel. Quote, such actions cannot be condoned and clearly constitute a war crime. Nevertheless, Israel's response has been grossly disproportionate and indiscriminate and resulted in the commission of multiple war crimes, end quote. You know, the charges of war crimes can go back and forth. We've said on this program before that acts of murder, no matter committed by whom, are acts of murder. And I've been chastised for that, I've been told, and in a sense I can understand where the chastiser is coming from, that when you live under occupation, you have a moral duty to resist the occupier. And if that means blowing up Humvees or blowing up buses, that is your moral obligation until you are free of the occupier. And I have heard from the other side who have said, when you have a force within your country that is dead set and determined on destroying your government, you have a right to suppress that force by any means necessary. And so it goes. Back and forth. Back and forth. Back and forth, and the death continues, and the destruction continues. God. Thanks to the Aussies for protesting this rat bastard vice president of ours who filthed and fouled up the air of Australia. The Australian police clashed with anti-war demonstrators in Sydney the other day during noisy protests against this three-day visit by this murderous megalomaniac Dick Cheney. There were arrests, it doesn't say here how many. Mr. Cheney said in a speech that China's recent test of anti-satellite weapons and its rapid military buildup were, quote, not consistent, end quote, with its stated aim of a peaceful rise as a global power. Oh, for Christ's sake. Don't you ever get so tired of this? Huh? If that's not consistent, then what the hell are we? Oh, I know. We're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, among which is the right to produce massive supplies of nuclear bombs, nuclear missiles, destructive systems of all sorts. That's what we are endowed by our Creator to do. The Chinese, on the other hand, being non-Christian communist sons of bitches, are only endowed by their Creator to produce junk that the American consumer will buy. And if they decide to increase the force and power of their military, then they are acting inconsistently as would be expected of a peaceful global power. The hypocrisy of this man is boundless. Boundless. we gave Iran in the 70s the nuclear technology to begin the construction of nuclear reactors because in the 70s, our puppet dictator terrorist, the Shah, was in power. Once the Islamic Revolution occurred, now as recently as 4 years ago, Dick Cheney's Halliburton Company was doing business in the nuclear industry in Iran. The hypocrisy of this murderous old son of a bitch is unbounded. So thanks to the people in Oz for raising a little sand with this thug. Andre wrote, Mike, damn, Cheney really showed who's the commander-in-chief, huh? Flying all over the planet and warning China about military buildup. All options open with Iran. Walking all over the Australians. Right. Well, that's what we said at the beginning of the program. Chucklenuts was sent out to talk about corn again. While Cheney threatens China and warns the Australians and Condoleezza is over pretending to try to strike a peace agreement between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And where do they send Nuthead? Where do they send Bush Jr.? Oh, he's going to go put on a lab coat and some goggles and talk about corn. And we're going to make electric cars. And they'll go vroom, vroom. They will, they will, they will. We'll have the sound from that when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. We haven't had a contest with little prizes on this program in a long time, and we're about to do it right now. Listen up. This requires your sending me an email with the correct answer and your name and mailing address, because what we will do is mail these to you, the prize, directly from the studio here in Atlanta. This is not through our home office in Phoenix. This is just a little thing from Kathy and me to you. Now, what we have here is, do you remember the Iraqi deck of death, the cards, the deck of cards that was put together with the Iraqis that we were going to go get and torture and murder and execute? We have the deck of Bush. Now, this goes back to 2003, so these are almost a collector's item. On the back, it says 54 reasons not to reelect George W. Bush. The four suits of the deck reveal the many facets of Bush. The spades reveal the real Bush, his alliance with the extreme right, religious conservatives, yada yada. The hearts describe Bush's gift to the American people, like budget cuts that affect children and families and veterans. The diamonds suit recount the money-grubbing corporate greed of the CEO president. And the suit of clubs appropriately cover the war with Iraq, its lies and deceit surrounding this quagmire. And as for the jokers, they expose Bush's biggest failures regarding the war on terror and the security of all Americans. Now, again, these are like collector's items, and I hope I don't irritate anybody here, but I forget who sent these to us. I know TV News Lies had a deck out that was probably on the same idea, but I don't think these came from them. This is the deck of Bush. And again, these things are all sealed up in just like a deck of cards. Boxes are sealed and they're wrapped in cellophane, shrink wrapped in cellophane. And this is it's got to be like a collector's item. So we have five of them that we're going to give away. Now this is going to be a musical. I know. This is the Molloy Show, and I'm usually screaming about death and destruction. I'll get to that in a second, I promise you. But we just want to do this. We want to send these out because we've got two of these decks that we're going to keep, and I've got five more to give away. So what we're going to do is play a song for you, and all I want you to do is tell me the artist and the name of the album. It's like Name That Tune. This is so hokey and jerky as to make even me a little nauseous. But, you know, I really don't care. You know me. I just really don't care. This is what I decided to do. Kathy looked at me this afternoon. She said, "What?" But I'm going to do it anyways, because the deck of Bush is worth having for yourself and your grandchildren. If anybody survives beyond 2012 or 2013, these things eventually, someday, will probably be priceless. And even if they're not, it'll be something you can sit down with your children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren and say, "God, look at this." So we're going to play this cut, and we're going to play a lot of it. And I want you to just listen to it. And then here's how you can win. It does not have anything to do with your phone. So if you're driving around in the car, I don't know what to tell you. You're going to have to do this via computer. That's right. You're going to have to do it online. Now, what you do is, if you know the name of the artist performing and the title of the album, you got to have both. Just email it to me. And in the subject line, put contest or whatever. But email to me tonight. For those of you who listen to this program via podcast, sorry, this is real time right now. Email to us, MikeDMalloy@AOL.com. Just email to us the name of the artist and the album. That's all I have to do. And the music is from, you know, it's from a few years ago. It was off an album that was one of my favorites. And we have a store here in Atlanta, Wuxtry, W-U-X-T-R-Y, Wuxtry Records, that deals in really unique and old music. And I asked the owner of Wuxtry, one of the partners, to find this for me about 8 months ago, because it's out of print. You can't get it anywhere. But if you hear the music, you may remember it. So he found it for me and even cut me a CD. So I'm so grateful for the effort. Thought we would just share it with you. Okay, you ready? You want to play it? All right, let's do it. Here's the song. Now remember, all you have to do is identify the artist and the album and send me an email with your name and address, so that we can, Kathy and I will mail you, if you're a winner, we will mail you one of these decks of Bush over the weekend. And in the subject line, as I said, put the word contest. Okay, here we go. Let's play the music. Thank you. Is it that hard? Come on! You remember this? This is from the 70s. You remember this music, don't you? Oh, my God. Jethro Tull? No, it's not Jethro Tull. Come on, you guys. I didn't think it would be this hard. Juan Gonzalez? No. Come on. Oh, my God. I can't believe that nobody knows what this music is. This guy was not... Mike, who in the hell is going to know the name of that song? I bet nobody gets it. Kathy, what's wrong with this guy? Vicky in Lakewood, Colorado. Wow. All right, let's see. Moody Blues from Clarice. No, it's not the Moody Blues. Man, I didn't know it would be this difficult. I really didn't. Captain Beefheart. No, that's not Captain Beefheart. Let me see. What does this one say? King Crimson. Court of the Crimson King. Nope. I'm sorry. Play some more. Yeah, that's a good idea. Flute Player Number One album, Get Out Your Flutes. No, that's not it. Man, this is not hard. Pink Floyd, Umaguma. No. No, not even close. Oh, my God. Suzanne writes, good evening, Mike. I have no idea, but it's pretty. All right, we're going to take a break in a few seconds here. Just, God, Mike, you have odd taste in music. Man, you people are brutal. What else? Stairway to Heaven, Led Zeppelin 4. No, not even. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
God, you people are crazy. You ought to see some of the answers I'm getting here, Kathy. Oh, my God. No, it's not Zamfir, backed by Richard Clyderman, featuring a young John Tesh. It's not the theme from Romeo and Juliet. It's not Stairway to Heaven. It's not Harry Chapin. I didn't realize this would be so hard. Good Lord. It's not Chuck Mangione. And some of the smart-ass answers come in are really funny. all right, we're going to play just a little bit more. I've got two right answers, by the way. I'm it's not Alex Lysenko. I've got two right answers so far. It's not Andreas Bolenvieder. All right, go ahead and play a little bit more. Blia, my sympathy to Kathy. Mike, no wonder it's out of print. How did it get a label in the first place?
I'm going to have to break out my own ice pick here in a minute.
Hey, leave me alone. Mike Oldfield? No, it's not Mike Oldfield.
Can we talk about the laundry again?
Orrin Hatch?
Singing John Ashcroft's backup band.
You people are brutal. Zamfir album, Crazy About the Pan Flute? No. Uriah Heep, Renaissance, Deep Purple. No, it's not. No, Renaissance, oh, that's close. Come on, you guys. Let me see what else is here. Lucifer was Underground and Beyond. No, that's... theme from Love Story? No. A couple more. Paul Horn. No, it's not Paul Horn. Come on, you guys can get this.
This is one for the award shows. We're going to have to just save the whole... This is the best talk radio we've ever done.
The guy with one name who played Endless Hokum. Yanni? Yanni? Best of Yanni? No, it's not. It's not Yanni. Okay, all right. It's either Procol Harum or Gary Lewis of the Playboys. No. Man, I just, dude, I have no idea, but tell me more about the cards. I am needing a boost tonight as I am damn near suicidal, but too chicken to do it, and Mom would be pissed, not to mention the potential bad karma from quitting before I finish enduring all the torture this miserable life has left in store for me.
I didn't know Matthew from Bedford had email.
I know. Do I get more than one guess? Cheryl in Albuquerque wants to know. No, Cheryl, you only get one, and that was the wrong one. All right, what's this one? Oh, my God, somebody sent me Herbie Mann, Nirvana. No, Kate, it's not Herbie Mann. All right, here's one that says, please. Long-time listener, love your show, but please tell me the name of the music you play nightly after the 8 p.m. news. Okay, one more. I can't believe this. Mike, the answer is, I have no idea. Is it Firefall? That's Francine from Mar Vista. Well, so far we've got about 100. Yusuf Lateef, Richard Harris, Herbie Mann. All right, stop. Stop. Yeah, the emails keep coming in. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to give you the name yet because I have two right answers, and I'll tell you who got it right so far. Taylor got it right, and David got it right. But David, you're going to have to send me your email again because it's kind of weird. Your address, your home address, all right? And put in the subject line, David's home. No, don't do that because then I get a million of those. Just send it in again, David. David, whose last name starts with a K. So both David, whose last name starts with a K, and Taylor, whose last name starts with a D, got it right. So we've got two right answers. I don't know what was so what's so difficult about that tune. I really don't. All right, let's get to some serious stuff. When do we break again? About a minute. All right, just a little bit here on Cheney, and when we come back, you're going to get to hear Chuckle Nuts. Cheney refused today to take back his charge that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's opposition to the Iraq war escalation is playing into the hands of the Al-Qaeda terrorist network, huh? Yeah, he was, where was he when he made this? He was out of the country. You remember how the Republicans used to just scream and bitch and froth and foam at the mouth when one of our elected leaders would say something about the Congress when they were out of the country, right? If it was a Democrat. During an interview Friday with Sydney, in Sydney, Australia, with the Australian Broadcast Corporation, ABC News, Cheney said, quote, I'm not sure what part of it is that Nancy disagreed with. She accused me of questioning her patriotism. I didn't question her patriotism. I questioned her judgment. Asked if he was willing to take back his criticism of Pelosi, Cheney replied, quote, I'm not backing down, end quote. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullock.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Wow! All right. Let's stop. I guess that was more difficult than I thought. All right, we got two winners. Taylor Durant and David Kronk. And we will be sending to both a deck of Bush. Nobody else got it. And we got, I haven't checked all of them. I can't. There's about 200 replies here. We'll wait till the end of the show. Yeah, we'll wait because we may have some other winners in here. Holy cow. Cow, look at this. All right, so I'm not going to tell you right now, but Taylor and David, you got it right. You got it right. Both of you did. You got the album and the artist. All right. Moving right along, if we still have any affiliates left, we have to do that once in a while. We haven't had a contest in 2 years, so I don't hear any bitching.
There's a reason for that.
I don't want to hear any bitching. I just don't. I can't talk about these murderers every night without a break, Kathy. I can't do it. George in Alhambra, California, saw what I saw today, and that was Nancy Pelosi. A tape. I guess she responded the other day to Cheney's assault on the Speaker of the House. And George in Alhambra, California, wrote, "Mike, Nancy Pelosi appeared stunned at Cheney's comments over her and Murtha's position on the war. In her response to Cheney's comments that aired on all the networks, you could see in her eyes that she was literally suffering from shock. I hope that is not just wishful thinking on my part, but perhaps this will be the turning point. Maybe Pelosi will finally understand who she's dealing with. If the Democrats don't begin the process of removing these people from office, then the entire party could be charged with dereliction of duty. The citizens of this country should not have to wait another day. We can't afford to wait another day."
I've just got one question. How can you tell by looking at Nancy Pelosi if she's shocked?
Oh, I've got the same feeling. I saw that tape, too. Her eyes were kind of open, pupils dilated, and her skin was kind of gray.
And her eyebrows were arched like she'd had maybe one too many Botox shots. Again, let me ask the question. How does one tell when Nancy Pelosi looks shocked?
You're in a strange frame tonight, huh?
Am I wrong?
I don't know if you're wrong or not, but now you're going to get emails about your being a sexist. Oh, wait a minute. You're female like Nancy is. All right, let's do some chuckle nuts. Supposed adults were wandering around the planet. Cheney, the murderous megalomaniac psychopath, was in Australia and Japan and criticizing the Chinese, trying to start another war. Condoleezza Rice ran out of shoe stores in Tel Aviv, so she headed for wherever she headed for in Israel to talk about peace in the Middle East, which is impossible until there is a regime in Washington and a regime in Israel that really is interested in peace. And a regime in the Palestinian Authority. And they all can sit down and make nice. But where did they send chuckle nuts when the apparent, and I say apparent because they're not, they're just as bad as chuckle nuts, but the apparent adults, at least they are articulate. I don't think anyone is more articulate than Condoleezza Rice, even though what she says is just stupendous nonsense. And what Cheney says, I don't know. When I hear Cheney talk, I just get the feeling he's really saying, we're going to kill everything. We're going to destroy the planet. We're going to eat all the corpses. We are going to cause murder and mayhem. We are going to send rivers of blood flowing around the equator. That's what we're going to do. And if Nancy Pelosi doesn't understand that, it's obvious that she's a goddamn traitor. It's blood, it's corpses, and dead stuff. So what was your question? Whew. While they're doing that, they send chuckle nuts to go talk about corn and hogs and stuff. So yesterday, Raisin Brain got sent on a fun-filled trip while Dick and Condi did pretend grown-up foreign policy stuff. Kind of like, you know, when you're a little kid and you dress up in your mommy and daddy's clothing and go clopping around the house in mommy's high heels, right? Bush went all silly in the South, eating barbecue and dressing up like a smart person in goggles and a white lab coat, saying fun words like cellulosic ethanol and fire alarm. Bush King kicks things off with his usual claptrap about farmers and foreign oil.
Doesn't it make sense to be able to say to our farmers, grow what you can grow so it would become less dependent on oil?
Yeah.
I like the idea of a president being able to say, wow, the crop reports in. We're growing more corn than ever before.
Yeah.
It means it's an exciting time to think about farmers not only going to grow what we need to eat, But it's going to grow what we need to run our automobiles.
Hell, that's coming.
That's what we're here to discuss today. I know it sounds like a pipe dream to some, but you're here for some experts here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just a history major, and I'm with PhDs.
Hot damn! How about that? I'm just a history major, and listen to me talk, because I know I'm here in, where am I? I'm in North Carolina, so I'm going to talk like-ish. I'm just a history major, and a failed one at that. What does Monkey Man say about history? Sometimes it's so far back, it seems like it doesn't count. I bet his Yale professors loved him on that one. And I'm with PhDs!
Can I put on the lab coat and the shoe covers again? Will you let me ride the little golf cart thingy in the sterile room? I want another test tube. I broke mine. No fair. Can I ride the elevator again?
Jesus, please help us. Oh, man, the crop report is in. Wow, the crop report is in. We're growing more corn than ever before, which means it's an exciting time to think about farmers. Not only are going to grow what we need to eat, but it's going to grow what we need to run our automobile. What did Foxy the Snowman say a few weeks ago, that no other administration in history had done more to advance scientific research on energy and global climate change? Remember that? Surpassing Clinton and Al Gore. Did you know, Truth Seekers, that one day you can drive electricity in a car that doesn't look like a golf cart? That's right, you can drive electricity. And that if you want to reduce the amount of petroleum you import, you have to reduce gasoline consumption. File this under no crap, Sherlock, section of the White House website. Here he is again.
If you really want to reduce the amount of oil that you consume, you got to reduce the amount of gasoline you use.
Really?
And there's a couple of exciting things that are taking place. One is new battery technologies. And someday you're going to be able to get in your car, particularly if you're a big city person, and drive.
How far?
40 miles.
40?
On a battery.
Yeah.
It's coming. And by the way, the car doesn't have to look like a golf cart. It can be a pickup truck. And if we're able to drive the first 40 miles or, say, 20 miles on gasoline, there's a lot of big city folks that will never have to use a drop of gasoline on a daily basis. They'll be driving electricity.
Jesus Christ, I can't, you can't make this stuff up. And by the way, the car doesn't have to look like a golf cart. It could be a pickup truck. And for you smart people, that's what we drive in Crawford. And if we're able to drive the first 40 miles or say 20 miles on gasoline, what? What? There's a lot of big city folks, you know, from Houston and Dallas that will never have to use a drop of gasoline on a daily basis. They'll be driving electricity. If you want to reduce the amount of oil that you consume, you got to reduce the amount of gasoline you use. Jesus God. You know, I always thought this man was a dumbass. That's incredible, not to mention profound. So here he goes again at the Novozymes Incorporated plant in Franklinton, North Carolina. Bush was probably thinking about a joyride in that ethanol-powered race car outside the plant. Boom, boom. That's probably why he got all tongue-tied when talking about hog growers. Hog growers and cattle people and corn farmers. Or maybe he was sniffing the enzymes a bit too much yesterday. I think he's trying to explain here why other sources of ethanol other than corn need to be developed, because rising corn prices are affecting the pork and beef industries, or as he calls them, hog growers and cattle people.
Here's the problem. Right now, we're consuming about 7 billion gallons of ethanol a year made from corn. The problem is we got a lot of hog growers around the United States, and a lot of them here in North Carolina who are beginning to feel the pinch as a result of high corn prices.
Hot damn.
A lot of the cattle people around the United States. I've got a few of them in my home state.
Of Texas.
They're worried about high corn prices affecting they're making a livelihood. In other words, the demand for corn, because of agricultural use and now energy use, it's causing corn prices to go up. I bet you the agriculture commissioner's hearing from folks.
Yeah.
And so the question then is, how do you achieve your goal of less dependence on oil without breaking your farmers, without breaking your hog raisers. In other words, fuel derived from corn can be diversified.
Say what? Fuel, fuel derived from corn can be diversified. You like them big words? See, when I talk to y'all down here in North Carolina, I turn the word corn into a two-syllable thing. Corn. You like that? The problem is we got a lot of hog growers. You ever seen? I had me a handful of pig seeds one time, and they're all round and pink. And, you know, you toss them in where you've been cutting brush, and then you grow you a hog or two. If you can get a hog bush going, then you're in great shape. Because in a hog bush, you're going to get, oh, hell, I don't know, 8, 12 them suckers. Jesus, help us. See, this is one of those times when I wish I had some kind of religious sanctuary to fall back into so I could pray to something.
Oh, I'm the president and I'm okay. I bomb all night and I drill all day. I cut down trees and taxes too, especially for my pals. I'm really into marriage, but just for guys and gals.
He cuts down trees and taxes too, especially for his pals. He's really into marriage, but just for guys and gals.
Oh, I'm the president and I'm okay. I bomb all night and I drill all day. I cut down...
Technology is going to change the way we live for the good for the environment. That's why I proposed a hydrogen automobile, hydrogen generated automobile.
It's about 9 before the hour. All right, we have one more for you from Chuckle Nuts speaking at a panel discussion regarding cellulosic ethanol at Novozymes Incorporated yesterday in Franklinton, North Carolina, where he gets all smart and stuff. All right, let's give it one more shot. Let's see if this one makes any more sense here. A Bush here tries to use three-syllable adjectives without a whole lot of success to describe to the assembled scientists the importance of technology in a competitive global economy with serious issues of national security and environmental concerns. Whee! This is so much fun.
Being on the leading edge of technological change means that we'll also be able to deal simultaneous with economic insecurities that come when China demands more for oil, the world produces less, the price of oil goes up, and so does the price of gas at the pump here in North Carolina.
Woo!
National security concerns, where some people who've got oil don't like us,
woo,
and therefore may be willing to use their energy resources to try to cause America to take a different view of the world.
What?
And environmental concerns. And all these three concerns come together with technology as a solution. And these are exciting times. They really are.
Kill me now. Please kill me now. See, you people, some of the emails I'm getting from you about my little music contest are just devastating. You're just breaking my heart. And in punishment for your snotty comments, I made you listen to George W. Bush. So we're about even. Remember way back when presidents were smart and respected? Think back. That was before American Idol and Anna Nicole's decomposing corpse. And it did. It used to be true. We used to have smart presidents. We'll be able to deal simultaneous. But they got economic insecurities that come when China demands war for oil. Those greedy bastards. Oh, my God. All right. Well, you all tortured me with some of these answers from the contest, so I just tortured you back with a little bit of George. How's that? God, some of these are funny. No, I mean, some of the answers you send here are just funny as hell. They really are. And will I'm going to play should I play any more of the music? Kathy's eyes go wide. She looks like Nancy Pelosi, and she's shaking her head so hard it's going to roll off your shoulders, kid. Calm down. I'll tell you what, I want you to play it when we go out in about a minute here. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. Jana writes in, call the police. This is from BMW. What is so hard about knowing that song is that most of us in the 70s did not listen to that kind of music. Is it Deep Purple? Led Zeppelin? This is from Sarge. Sure, I have been around hell the last year and a half, heard some sad stuff, but your music quiz reminds me things could be worse. From Eva in Michigan. Sounds like music played in my holistic chiropractor's lobby with incense burning somewhere. From Yimsters. It's the Monkees. Take the last train to boredom. From DJ Patrick. It's Peter Mancini, or the flautist who plays Standing on One Leg. I can't remember his name. He's now probably an old hippie. You guys, I swear to God, this is... I just had no idea that... apparently when this artist was popular, and he was popular, he really was. No, he was, Kathy. When he was popular, you were what, about 7 years old? So I wouldn't be surprised if you don't, or 8 years old. I wouldn't be surprised if you don't know who it is.
And he's still boring, even after his death. Or is he dead?
No, well, I don't know. I don't think so.
If you don't know, he probably wasn't that popular.
No, he was. He really was popular. Oh well. Okay. I'll tell you what we'll do. Is it Van Morrison? No, it's not Van Morrison. I'll just never do another contest. It's Yes, Close to the Edge. No, it's not. Yanni at the Parthenon. No, it's not. Not Yanni, Dorothy. John Ashcroft?
Is it Jan Hammer, Music for Suicide?
No, no, it's not that. Burt Bacharach. No, Bruce, it's not Burt Bacharach. King Crimson, no. Hocus Pocus. No. King Crimson, no.
Could we play some of that music?
Wishbone Ash. No, it's not Wishbone Ash. We got another winner, though. We got three now. Kim. Kim in San Francisco got it. What does this say? Steve and John Hackett, Voyage of the Acolyte. No.
No, I know what the email says. It says, keep your cards. Just make it stop.
Meatloaf, Bad Out of Hell. Mike in St. Paul. No, no. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. I've just had a grand time here during the break reading some of your emails. I don't know what I expected. I do a brutal show and I get brutal responses on a contest. Let me share some of these with you. Some are funny. So, this is from Leslie in Milpitas, California. It's E. Presley. Elvis plays the flute. From Michael in Minnesota. Iggy Pop, and the album is the pre-punk years. I think that's the song that he played while he got body tossed and spread peanut butter all over himself. Eric in San Francisco, is it the Dr. Kevorkian Memorial Flute Ensemble playing their one and only big hit single, Go to Sleep? The flip side of the Nightmare Before Christmas, Velvet Top says. SK, it was Ted Haggard's high school band. Anthony from Malmo, Sweden, here again. Could it be a rare hidden track from ABBA? From 703-309-3311. Percy Faith, the theme from Shove the Ice Pick In Further. I can still hear it. From Velvet Top again. It probably sounds better in a vacuum. From Sheila, Ice Pick Serenade by the Thighs. And from Amelia, dear Mike, who cares? Play the polka song. Okay. All right. George Reeves, not the Superman guy, in Stockton, just sent in the right answer, too. But George, and you're the fifth one, but you didn't send me your address. So if you will send in your address, this misery is all over, and we will send these out over the weekend. This is from Scott. Now, I'm not being a smartass, but is this the theme music to The Exorcist?
It's a new polka. Who stole my eardrums?
Oh, my God. All right, one more here. Just one more. The Theo Travis Band, Earth to Ether. Is that a real one?
But damn, we just blew next week's contest.
Carla Fleck and the Flecktones? What the hell is that? Okay, here's the last one. Cake. No, I don't think it's Cake. Oh, my God. Is it Jimmy Ferris, the Straubs? No, it's not that. Is it the Blues Project? No. You're getting all serious on me again. All right. Elvis Presley plays the flute. Okay, that's enough. You want to know who it was? Nobody wants to know who it was. Nobody has emailed in and said, I don't know the answer, but Jesus, be sure and tell us because it's lovely music. Joanne writes, it sounds familiar, like a Moody Blues vamp between tracks.
You know, I guess what's really terrible about this is you let everyone out there in the listening world know that you searched and searched and searched for this album and you were just overjoyed when you were able to find it.
I have made no secret of the fact that I spent a lot of time in the 70s in an altered state of consciousness. And back then, this is the album itself has some really good cuts on it. This is right in the middle. They're all up-tempo kind of jazz flute, except that one. And, you know, if you listen to the entire album, let's see, Mike, possible title of the music, Mantovani plays Memories on Pot. That's from Bill. Mantovani play. And Michael in Minnesota also says, Mike, if you play that song backwards, I bet it says stay in school and don't do drugs over and over and over again. Oh, my God. Earth, Wind, and Fire. No. It's not Earth, Wind, and Fire. Man. Vangelis, Chariots of Fire. No, Dennis, it's not that. All right. Enough already. It's Tim Weisberg. And if you just said Tim Weisberg, you got it. It's actually from Tim Weisberg 4. And numeral 4, and you know, there's some good. One of the reasons I want to get the album is because it has Flight of the Phoenix on it. Okay, No, Flight of the Phoenix is one, two, I don't know. Never mind, Kathy, don't play it because people will just freak out and we'll lose everybody.
Well, this sort of begs the question, if that's your favorite, why didn't we play that one?
Because it would have been one
too
more,
obvious.
One more here from Store. Is it a soundtrack from an old Swedish porn movie? No. Please tell us what the song is. Yeah, it's called Premonition, and it's from Tim Weisberg 4. So anyway, thanks. And the five people who, if George will send in his address, George got it. Taylor Durant and David Kronk and who else? Let me see here. Kim Ringel and Don Betts. Okay? We'll do this again in a couple of years. People are brutal. There's just this little bit to add here. 46 nations adopted a declaration today calling for a 2008 treaty banning cluster bombs, saying that these particular weapons kill and maim long after conflicts end, and that these weapons inflict what is referred to as unacceptable harm, as opposed to acceptable, on civilians, particularly children. There was a conference of 49 nations, but four of the key arms-making countries didn't attend. Organizers said the declaration was needed to avoid a potential humanitarian disaster posed by unexploded cluster munitions. Now you know what these things are, cluster bombs. They're little tiny bomblets that are packed by the hundreds into artillery shells or little bombs or missiles which scatter them over vast areas, and in so many instances a lot of them fail to explode immediately. And the unexploded bomblets, if you will, can lie there for years until they're disturbed, often by kids who pick them up. They look like toys. As many as 60% of the victims in Southeast Asia are children, right? Now, these weapons were recently used in Iraq, Kosovo, Afghanistan, and Lebanon. The UN estimated that Israel dropped as many as 4 million bomblets in southern Lebanon during last year's war with Hezbollah, with as many as 40% failing to explode on impact. A spokesman for Israel's foreign ministry said, quote, during the recent conflict in Lebanon, Israel used no munitions that were outlawed by international treaties or international law, end quote. Now, the reason that children can be attracted to these things is because of their size and shape and bright colors. And I don't mean to, in this particular instance, just to pick on Israel, it was horrifying to find out that allegedly Israel was using these in South Lebanon. You know, who knows? The first casualty of war is truth. We all understand that. The only people dropping them in Afghanistan is the United States. The only people dropping them in Iraq is the United States. The only people dropping them having dropped them in Kosovo was the United States. So you make your own decision here. But key arms-making countries, four of them, refused to attend the conference. They were the United States, Russia, Israel, and China. And of those who did attend, Poland, Romania, them again, and Japan did not approve the final text. So we will continue to shred children with cluster bombs.
There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Cloudy, there is still a light that shines on me. Shine until tomorrow.
22 past the hour. Well, that was nice. Wait till you come back from the break and clear your throat. The conference on banning cluster bombs, 49 nations attended. The U.S., Russia, Israel, and China snubbed the conference, and those four countries are some of the leading arms makers on the planet. Of course, we're number one. I think Russia's number two. China and Israel's a toss-up. The U.S., China, and Russia have refused to sign this treaty and oppose the Norwegian initiative on cluster bombs. Australia, India, Israel and Pakistan also did not attend. Those nations say the weapons should be dealt with in other arenas, such as the UN Convention on Conventional Weapons, known as CCW. Yeah, well, that's true. Let's argue about where it should be debated about how to ban them. Wasn't there an Irish woman who won the Nobel Peace Prize for working to ban, I forget her name, to ban these devices that come straight from a very, very sick mind. And the fact that these nations say no, you know, Israel, United States, China, India, Pakistan, whoever it is, they say no, we're going to keep making them, Russia, we're going to keep making these and keep using them. The reason this is just monumentally horrific is that wars now are not, there's never again going to be a war fought on a battlefield. Anyone who is in military planning knows this. This is why David Petraeus just wrote a book that's already outdated on how to handle insurgency warfare. There's never again going to be set piece battles. There's never going to be tank warfare. Or it's just not going to happen. It's going to be forever and ever and ever urban warfare, or else warfare in already depopulated countries like Afghanistan, in terms of its size, and I realize it has people there, but you know what I'm saying. This is where the fighting is going to occur. Therefore, the bombs will be used to shred the flesh of human beings, civilians. I mean, you can make the argument, if you are still sane and have a tiny shred of logic and rationality left inside your sucked dry brain, you can make, like mine, you can make the argument that all weapons of war are barbarous and hateful and ugly and destructive and miserable and murderous and kill people. But cluster bombs, a huge percentage of which don't explode. The little bomblets just don't. They just lay there. When was it, Kathy, right after we invaded Afghanistan, which I believe was early 2002 or late 2001, I think it was early 2002, when we invaded Afghanistan to try to track down the terrorists who launched the attack, or the people who trained them, by the way, they were Sunnis, who launched the attack against the United States, if you believe the official version of that story. And in Afghanistan, there was a humanitarian crisis because we were fighting the Taliban and they had cut off supplies. So the coalition of the crazy started dropping food packets. But the food packets were the same color as the cluster bomblets and the same shape. And you remember what happened? This is way back in the day. I think we were still slaves to IE America back then, weren't we? We're working for that toy network. And the children were going out, Afghan children were going out, and, oh, food! And it was horrifying. So civilized nations like China, Russia, the United States, and Israel have decided that the production and use of these things must continue. Oh, my God. I have a hard time with 90% of what I do in this program, unless it's Tim Weisberg. But this is just, I can't understand this. Little bomblets that 60% of the victims in Southeast Asia are children. And civilized nations like the United States and Russia and China, Israel say, no, we're going to keep making them and selling them and using them ourselves if we want to. Sorry, ta-ta.
Laura Picklesbush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
It's about 25 before the hour from Prairie 2. Hey, Mike, cluster bombs are worse than you stated. They are a mixed munition. A load, quote, includes bomblets intended to explode on contact, but most are, in effect, mines. Some have timers that will explode them hours or days later. Some will only explode on contact. Some are anti-vehicle mines that will tolerate a lot of handling before exploding. This is the kind that gets the most kids because they seem to be safe until they take them home and start taking them apart. I remember when the charge was made that cluster bombs were being used in South Lebanon last year. Up until that point, I honestly thought that they had been banned. I know that Iraq and Kosovo and Afghanistan and Somalia and where else? There are probably Vietnam. Kashmir section argued about by India and Pakistan. I'm sure there are more places where there are cluster bombs lying waiting. Afghanistan, waiting for children to pick them up or for a farmer to go over it with a tractor or a woman carrying a load of wood on her head to step on one. But I thought they had been banned from future use. Wasn't that the reason for the Nobel Peace Prize? I believe it was two women from, or am I getting this wrong? Somebody know, an Irish woman? Not the two women, the Catholic and the Protestant, who worked to try to bring the Troubles to an end, but I think it was an Irish woman, maybe she was Scottish, who was either nominated or won a Nobel Peace Prize for her work against cluster bombs. Maybe someone could send me an email with that person's name if such a person exists. Maybe I'm making her up. Cluster bombs. And isn't there something just so utterly perverse about the word bomblet? A bomblet. Oh, my God. We're going to do some phone calls here. Sarge is calling from Mississippi, been holding on. You almost set a record. I had somebody hold on one time, Sarge, for 2 hours and 57 minutes. So you're close.
Okay, Mike.
Yes.
I just gotta say, before I say anything to you, Kathy, I still have Dr. Justin Frank's phone number. We can get Mike help. We can do it. Yeah. This is not out of the realm of possibility.
Oh, good. Well, she'll be calling you on the phone.
Good. We can get help for you. No, seriously, that was kind of fun. I recognize the Stairway to Heaven song in there, so people that says Stairway to Heaven, they were, you know, technically right as well, aren't they?
No, they're even beyond wrong.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so far beyond wrong, it's in a different county.
Oh, well. What I wanted to tell you about, I talked to John McCain's office today. And, you know, they have a recall petition going on in Arizona on him. And it's a bipartisan effort. There's Republicans and Democrats taking part in this. So I called today to see if I could get some comment on it.
Uh-huh.
And I did some, it really hurt me to do it, but I just was sopping, sweet, sugar dropping nice to him. You know?
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
And I just really played up to him. And they never would deny the petition, but they you could tell they just really didn't want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
But they did finally tell me after I let them go to unreportednews.net and read the petition themselves that Leonard Clark had sent me.
Right.
They finally admitted, yes, we know about this petition, and we are going to respond to it next week. The senator's out this week, but we are going to respond to it this week, and we'll send you a response. And I called Leonard and asked him about it and said, I thought you might be interested in hearing that they do plan to respond. Well, it turns out they have to respond. They've got 10 days to respond to it. So,
why do they have to?
It's part of the legal procedure that comes into this. I can't tell you exactly why. Leonard didn't tell me, but they have a 10-day period where they have to respond legally by the state laws.
Well, what do you think you're going to get?
What I think I'm going to get is a bunch of
careful,
denial.
Careful.
Oh, I'm careful.
All right.
But I think I'm going to get a lot of denial. And he's going to try and defend his suspension of habeas corpus and use this phony war on terror and stuff like that. But it's going to be really interesting, and I'm really kind of holding my breath to see what kind of statement he's going to make on it, because this is really a black eye on him. There's no matter what he does, this is going all over Arizona, and, of course, it's being picked up on a lot of national media, too, our side, anyway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. It's something to really watch.
Well, if I don't pick up on it here, keep me posted on this, okay?
Okay. Hey, by the way, did you ever hear that Tim Ryan from last week when he really came down with the Republicans? He did. Jeff Farias played on Friday night, your last Friday night that you were off during your vacation. And I sent you the link to it. But, boy, you talk about some good stuff. Now, this guy really told these Republicans off. They were wanting him to yield the floor, and he said, I will not yield the floor. You know?
Huh.
It's really good stuff. I'll send you a link if you didn't.
All right. Yeah, I'd like to see it.
Okay. And, by the way, Cynthia Black, she says she doesn't announce her guests, so I won't tell you that I'll be on her show Sunday.
All right. Well, that's good.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Sarge. I appreciate you checking in. Who else has been holding on for over an hour? Almost Jay in Long Island. Been holding on for almost 2 hours. Hey, Jay. Hey, Jay. Jay?
Hey, sorry.
That's
you missed
all right.
Tim Ryan speaking, like the guy just mentioned, because he had this great line. You go to war with the president you want, not the president. The president that you have, not
yeah,
the president
not the
that
president
you want.
You want. Right, exactly.
And I think you were thinking of Helen Endicott.
No, Helen Caldicott, somebody else sent me an email. She is the Australian physician, pediatrician, who has been active in anti-nuke protests for the past 35 or 40 years. I had the amazing good fortune to walk down a deserted country road with her and maybe 500 other protesters over in South Carolina way back in 1978 at an anti-nuke protest against the Barnwell, South Carolina nuclear storage plant. And I was there as a reporter for a paper I was working for here in Atlanta, a weekly newspaper, alternative paper. But it was a long weekend, and I got to talk to her several times. And an amazing woman who was in the United States for other things, but flew to Charleston and then had somebody drive her to this protest. And that was, you know, it was a million years ago. But that's who Helen Caldicott is. The woman I'm thinking of was an I'm almost positive she was Irish, who worked against the bomblets, you know, the cluster bombs.
Right. Well, anyway, speaking of protests, like I told you, screener, you know, a lot of people like you and myself and your audience are always thinking, what more can we do besides just talk about these problems and hold peace marches and rallies that really don't have any effect? And I'm thinking, if we had a hunger strike for the sake of saying, you know, I want Sean Hannity and Larry King to say, why are you holding a hunger strike? And now I want to say, why don't you ask William Buckley Jr.? Because he said Bush should resign. So ask someone with his background and his reputation why he would say that. Ask the author of United States vs. Bush, who was a federal prosecutor for 20 years. Ask the five CIA guys who told Ted Koppel that they voted for Bush and they're Republicans, and they think the whole Valerie Plame thing thinks to high heaven. You know, when you have so many things of that nature and so many people from the right of prominence who are saying these things, wouldn't a hunger strike at least get you the audience, you know, national attention to say, ask these questions?
You'd think.
Is that what it's going to take? I mean, because if it is, why aren't we doing it?
I don't know. With this gang, a hunger strike, they would probably say, let the bastards starve. Or remember what happened to the hunger strikers in Guantanamo. They were strapped to chairs and force-fed through, when they wouldn't take it out through their mouths, they were force-fed through tubes in their stomachs. And the people inserting the tubes, it's my understanding from a conference I attended with ACLU lawyers who were representing some of these people, the people inserting the tubes were not very gentle when they rammed them into their guts. So you have to remember what we're dealing with here. You know, unless we had 150,000 people going on a hunger strike in Lafayette Park across from the White House, that might work. But we're dealing with a regime that is like the old Soviet regime in internal politics. They don't give a tinker's damn about any of this.
I mean, look, Larry King can talk about Nicole Smith for a whole week, and we can have one person who's on a hunger strike saying, I want you to ask William Buckley Jr. why he should resign. Force that conversation.
All right, I'll do it. I'll absolutely do it. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
Starched white shed. You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean sheds to play around
before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program and handled your phone calls tonight. Thank you, Ian. Thanks to Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall of MikeMalloy.com webmaster, and the moderators at our website. Go to NovamRadio.com. Sign up for downloads and podcasts and a chance to win $10,000. And program note, join Jeff Farias beginning Monday, March 5th. For the Jeff Farias program, it'll be on 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. in Phoenix on KPHX. But it's not just for Phoenix audiences. Nova M subscribers will be able to download or podcast the Jeff Farias program starting Monday, March 5th. You've heard Jeff. He's filled in for me before when we've been off. And if you don't, we're going to keep playing this album until, if you don't sign up to be a NovM founder, we're going to play this every single night.
I don't think anyone's going to believe you that you searched high and low to find this album after decades of not being treated to this wonderful musical treat that, you know,
You know, you have to sleep with me tonight. Only
if you turn your laundry in the right way. If you don't turn your T-shirts the right way,
I don't know what, you know, people like, what's his name, Andreas Vollenbeater. What's wrong with this? And
where should I start?
Oh, here it is. Marty emailed in. The woman you speak of is Jody Williams. She was awarded half the Peace Prize in 1997, along with the group she apparently founded, ICBL, the International Campaign to Ban Landmines. That's the person, Jody Williams, in 1997. And here we are 10 years later and still feel, well, we do, and the Chinese do, and the Russians do, and the Israelis do. We feel it is proper and sensible to make and scatter these things in suburbs and cities and deserts and mountain ranges because they are so effective. Huh? Well, Laura Sue writes into me and says, Dear Mike, please do not apologize for liking Tim Weisberg. I, too, spent quite a while trying to find a copy of his Listen to the City years after loving it during those infamous druggy 70s. I'm a flautist, and Tim Weisberg is definitely listed on the favorites page of my website. Her website is silvernightingale.com. Silvernightingale.com. So for all you critics, take that.
Yes. For all you flautists, take this.
back to your phone calls. Eddie is calling from Miami. Eddie, welcome to the program. Yo, Eddie.
Yes.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Is this Eddie or Edie?
Eddie. Yes.
Okay.
I'm just calling to say congratulations.
Oh, yeah?
You're back on the air.
No, really?
Really.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of us here in Miami missed you.
I know you did, and you.
Well, you was off the air.
That's right, and you put pressure on the on the powers that be down there to get me back, and I'm forever grateful.
Mm-hmm. So it's very good to hear your voice back.
Uh huh.
Kathy, I just haven't heard you say anything about Molly too much.
Oh, not tonight. I haven't said anything. She's asleep. If I mention her name, she'll wake up.
Oh, she'll wake up.
And then the program's finished.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Mike, glad to hear you.
Well, Eddie, thank you so much. I'm glad you called in. You take care, all right?
Okay, and you do the same.
Stay in touch.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Eddie. John is calling from D.C. John, welcome to the program.
How you doing? You had a caller that was talking about a hunger strike?
Yeah.
How come that's never happened?
I guess it's just not something we do in this country. Occasionally it happens, but most of us in America are not that concerned about the things that ought to concern us. So we just don't do it.
But why is that?
I don't know. I have no answer. I'm like you. I'm just a seeker.
But we have troops that are willing to volunteer their lives to defend this country, but the left won't defend their side to the same.
Hello? Hello? I guess he got excited and hit his off button. Obviously, that was a right winger who the troops volunteered to defend this country. That's really an interesting thing to say, since most of the people who are in the military right now did not volunteer to do this. Volunteered to defend our country. I know that the guy's not listening. He can't, these right-wingers can't handle even a small chunk of truth. But they didn't volunteer to go to Iraq and kill people for no reason. They volunteered to join an honorable military, and oh, hell, what's the point? All right, listen, have a great weekend. Thanks for participating in the contest tonight. We'll get these mailed over the weekend. I'll see you Monday night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.